All right, here we go. When I was maybe 11 or 12, I had these little monster trucks, these little Hot Wheels monster truck toys that I would play with, and they were really cool. And I would build roads and ramps, and I would race them and jump them to see which one was the best, which one would go the furthest. I still have them. They're sitting in our loft at our house, and I always imagined how awesome of a driver I was going to be when I was older, because I could take those corners. So smooth. It was awesome. And one day, my dad comes to me, say 11 or 12, and he says, "Chad, get my keys to my truck, and you got to move the truck. It's blocking your mom. You got to move to the other side of the driveway." And I had never driven before. I had never been told how to drive. I knew absolutely nothing. My dad said, "Get the keys and move my truck." And then he went and sat back down in his chair in the living room and pretended as if he hadn't just changed my life completely. So this is my dad's truck. My dad's truck. And so, okay, I got the keys and I'm nervous. I get in. I've never been taught. I've seen it done, so I know how to start it. And I'm like, okay, I got to back the truck up. I got to turn the wheels, and then I got to pull in beside my mom's car. That's what I got to do. So, okay, I backed it up, and then I turned, and I did not turn enough. And right beside my mom's car, I was sitting like that. And I'm like, I'm in so much trouble right now. I've got to get out of here. So I put it in reverse, and I started backing. But I was there. Well, that didn't work. Maybe I should try going forward again. And I went forward one more time. And now the vehicles were, they were absolutely bound together. They were not moving. Everything was scraped on the side as I'm looking out the window. And I was convinced that that was the day that I was going to die. My own father was going to end my life. I was sure that it was over for me. And I had to go tell him what I had done. And I was hiding in my room because I was so I was so afraid. It was my dad's truck. And you know what? He didn't get angry at all. He utterly let it go. He never once made me feel bad for it. He came to my room where I was hiding. Him and my brothers went out there and kind of just bumped the truck over a little bit so they could get out of there. Everything was scraped up on both sides. And he let it go. And he said, "You know what? It was my fault." He said, "I never actually taught you how to do it." And he said, "This one's on me." And then a few years later, when I was old enough, he taught me how to drive. And that was great. Now, he could have crushed me. He could have really made it hard for me, but he didn't. He had taken a bit of a risk on me. I messed it up thoroughly, and he didn't shame me for it. He let me try. He let me fail. And then he took responsibility for his son. He took responsibility for me. He took responsibility to teach me how to be better. And in due time, that's just what he did. Tonight, we're going to talk about raising sons. Or to put it in a better way, raising men. And since we are men here, whether you have a son or not, we can all learn about ourselves, what we are for, since that is what we are called to train our sons to be. We're supposed to train them to be like men. And if we are men, then we need to know this stuff as well. So this applies to all of us. A few verses from the book of Proverbs kind of set our tone here. "The father of the righteous will greatly rejoice, and he who fathers a wise son will be glad in him. A wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish son is a sorrow to his mother. He who sires a fool gets himself sorrow, and the father of a fool has no joy. A foolish son is a grief to his father, and a bitterness to her who bore him." And in the book of Proverbs, the difference between a foolish son and a wise son comes from the teaching he receives from his father. It's not something that happens on accident. It's right from Proverbs chapter 1, the father's talking, "Son, listen to me, and I'm going to teach you wisdom. I'm going to discipline you. I'm going to train you. Listen to me." And all of Proverbs, except for the last chapter, really, is the father teaching his son how to be a man, how to be wise. So you don't get wise sons on accident. You have to train them. So the lesson is that your son needs a father. He needs a teacher. He needs someone who is going to watch out for him and give him opportunity. So if you have a son or ever will have a son, God calls you to raise him up in the fear and admonition of the Lord. You can't get away from it. To train him in righteousness, wisdom, and strength. Your son's training is your responsibility, primarily yours above all others. And if you don't have sons, you just have daughters like I have, this really matters to you as well, because the day is going to come when those daughters are going to be looking for men. And you're really going to want them to be wise and godly young men. So it's primarily your job, Dad. It's not primarily your wife's responsibility or their teachers in school or Sunday school. It's not primarily the pastor's job and definitely not the internet's job. God's going to hold you to account. He has said, Father, you raise your son, train him. Now, this means that you can't be a spectator to your son's development. You cannot be on the sidelines watching him grow. You're responsible for him. It's your job. So you got to get out there. God has sent that boy to you and into your care. So men, take responsibility for your sons. That's the first lesson. Fathers need to take responsibility for their sons' training. That's huge. Now the question is, do you know what you're trying to do with your son? What are you doing? Are you trying just to get little Jimmy just to sit still at the table? Is that the goal? Or are you trying to train little Jimmy to be a man who stands strong in his generation, who raises his family well? Very, very different goals. What is your goal? Often, we're just trying to get him to sit still. That is the goal in the moment. But we can get stuck there and we can lose sight of the greater goal. We need to know what it is we're supposed to be doing. Our goal should be bigger. Discipline and training is not just for the immediate results. You're after something in particular and you can get that immediate result. You're not done. That's not the primary goal. The aim of discipline is for results that are going to last a lifetime. Discipline has an ultimate end goal, not just the immediate. So you can teach your son not to touch the hot stove. That's good. He should learn that. But will you ever teach him how to handle a hot stove? Perhaps your son needs to learn to sit still in church. That's good. But is your son learning to love the church? Why is he sitting still? Why is that important to you? Do you know what the goal is? So discipline teaches. It doesn't just rebuke. Discipline builds up. It doesn't tear down. You're supposed to be building something. Way too many times, all that our sons will hear is, be careful. Be careful. When they should be hearing far more, be aware. Be aware of your surroundings, son. Know what it is and who you are affecting. Know what the dangers are. Know how to overcome your fears. Know how to do the work. Be aware of what you're doing. Take dominion. Take the lead. Son, be aware of your surrounding. If all the son ever hears is, be careful, be careful, be careful, he's going to learn to be afraid, be afraid, be afraid. There's always danger lurking everywhere I go. Everything I hear is, be careful. Well, there's danger here somewhere. And he will learn to be afraid. If your son hears, be aware, he's going to learn wisdom, he's going to learn strength, and he's going to learn how to be careful at the same time. He will learn all of it. We need to teach our sons to be aware. So when you take responsibility for the training of your sons, the first question, obviously, is train them for what? What is the end goal? If you're coaching the basketball team, you're going to coach the fundamentals of basketball. If you're coaching boxing, you're going to teach how to throw a punch, how to get punched. You're going to teach footwork. So what are you coaching your sons for? That's the question. If you get that right, you're going to have a trajectory in those moments of training and discipline. God gives you a son and he says, build him up. Train him. And you say, okay, for what? I need a purpose here. What are sons for? Now, I'm tonight going to give you three things that sons are for. These three things are good guiding principles to use in your training. If you keep these in mind, you can be a faithful father to your son. Now, I hope that by now, after what we've come through in the past year or two in training, that we understand that men and women have purpose in life. God has created them for something. We're not free to do just whatever we want with our lives. We have been given tremendous freedom, but we can't do just whatever we want. There is such a thing as gendered piety. Gendered piety. Gender, there are two genders. God made them. Piety is a religious obligation. God made them for a reason. There's a reason why he didn't fill the earth with just men. There are women here. There's a reason he didn't fill the earth with just women. There is religious obligation, which means obligation to God. He has made us for a purpose. There is a reason he has given you strength. There's a reason why he has given you broad shoulders. There's a reason why he has made you tough. Just like there's a reason why he has made women more prone to emotion. Why he has made her the weaker vessel. There's purpose in it. So our design has purpose. Now this is, we've talked about this a lot over the last year or two. There is such a thing as gendered piety. God has given us great freedom, and yet we are made for a distinct purpose, and we're responsible to pursue that purpose. So then, in a broad sense, what are sons for? I'm going to give you three. These aren't necessarily any particular order. Sons are for strength. Proverbs 20:29 says, "The glory of young men is their strength." They are made for strength. So when Paul says in Corinthians that we are to act like men, he is instructing us to develop our strength. Strength is the glory of young men. Boys are meant for strength. It is their glory. Our young men should be strong. This would include physical strength. This would include mental fortitude, spiritual conviction, and above all, self-control. Teach the young men self-control, Paul says. Young men are to be trained to be strong. And in particular, when it comes to self-control, I didn't bring it here, but thoughts for young men. You guys are, some of you are familiar with that little book. Tremendous, tremendous little book. And I often like to hand that one out if you can get someone to read it. The author there, I'm just going to paraphrase him a little bit. Thoughts for young men. And he says, why am I addressing the young men? Why does that matter so much? And he says, well, think about this. Ask anybody. Who are the most likely to rebel against authority in our society? Well, the young men. Who are most likely to roll their eyes and be bored with biblical instruction? The young men. I remember. Who takes most delight in wrecking things in our society? It's the young men. Who are the majority of people in prison? The young men. Who sits in the drunk tank the most? The young men. Who is given to watching the most pornography? The young men. Who are the hardest to reach with the call to responsibility? The young men. Count on it. Young men are called to strength, to be strong. And everywhere in our world, you see them enslaved to whatever is cool, whatever gets them status with their friends, enslaved to their own passions and lusts. And they are the ones who are most likely to throw away the things of the Lord. Now, that little book by J.C. Ryle, Thoughts to Young Men, I've handed out often over the years to young men. I don't know how many I've handed out, and I can think of maybe two that have come back to say that they've read it. And I always tell them, read the first chapter, at least that one, to see if it doesn't stir your heart. And it's hard to get the young men to read it. It's hard. Young men are strong, and they need to be trained in discipline, in self-control, to know what that strength is for. The world tells them to fool around, do what you want. Have some fun. And so when a young man hears, take responsibility, he's not really interested. We don't naturally crave responsibility, not usually. We crave fun. And when the church offers them discipleship, often they will drift off looking for fun. And that leads to weak men. And weak men end up deeply afraid, deeply insecure, dependent on the approval of others. And so what's the answer? Teach them. Teach them to be strong. It is their glory. Our sons need to learn what they are for. Our sons need to learn to love their strength, which means that they are to be taught to love responsibility so they can use that great strength that God has given them. He has given it to them for a purpose, not to squander on themselves and their selfish desires, but to bear up burdens, to provide and protect. Our sons are to be taught to learn responsibility and what their strength is for. Young men need to learn to love, honor, providing, protecting, using your strength so that others can thrive. To learn to not be a slave of the world. Be stronger than the world. When we teach the boys to be strong, that means they're not going to be boys for long. They are going to crave manhood. They're not going to be boys long. And what men they will be when they learn to love their strength before the Lord. When boys don't want to become men, then boys is what they will remain. So the young men, they are meant to grow up to be the dragon slayers of their generation. They will have battles to face and to fight. They need to know how to engage the enemy and win. They haven't yet learned to develop or use their strength. Dads, you need to teach them how that's done. Do you know how it's done, right? Boys need to be taught to be strong. It's their glory. Young men want to do great things in their life, and we must teach them that's a good desire. You should want to do great things. You should desire to be strong. Teach the young men to be strong. If all we want from our sons is that they go to bed on time, we are missing out on what we are supposed to be teaching them. We are to remember what he is for. So when your son becomes a man, what should he know? Deep in the marrow of his bones, what should that young man know? First thing he should know is how strong he is. How strong he is and what that strength is for. He needs to know that. Fathers, you have such influence and power over your son. If you crush him, he will not think that he is strong. And when the challenges come, he's going to cave and he'll be afraid. It's your responsibility, Dad, to teach him his strength before the Lord. The young men should love their strength. Second thing that sons are for. Marriage and children. Again, there's a reason why God didn't fill the world with just men. There's a reason why he made us two genders. There is a responsibility before the Lord. We need to teach our sons. We learned this right from the beginning. God said it was not good for the man to be alone. He was not intended to be alone. And so God made a helper fit for him, the woman. And they fit together, this man and woman. So a man, son, is for marriage, which means he is also for children. The purpose of maleness and masculinity is for marriage and children. We must teach our sons to love this. You are made with a purpose. And one of the things to teach when we talk about strength and the need for self-control, one of the things to teach to not shy away from is the good and proper use of our sexual desire. That is massive to learn. My dad never taught me. He was a little afraid to. He sent my mom to teach me about sex. And she came to my room one night and she says, Chad, do you know about girls? And I'm like, yes, I know about girls. Good, good, that's good. We're done here. And then she left. And that was the extent of my training. It was lacking in a few areas. We can't shy away from those difficult conversations. Young men are strong. They have deep passions and desires. Why? Because God put them there. They're good. They are good, and we need to teach them what they are for. Boys need to learn the goodness of sex within marriage and only within marriage. We live in this hyper-sexualized world. We're inundated with sexual imagery wherever you go. Immodesty has become a virtue in our society. Our society promotes that. It's encouraged. The world hates monogamy, hates the family. The world hates honorable men. And our sons need to be taught how to laugh at the world. Laugh at them. You can make fun of such lies as that. And our sons need to learn how to laugh at the hatred of the world and so learn to love their wives, to rejoice in the one woman, and to pursue her, forsaking all others. Teach your sons. Your son needs to learn to control himself and to live with his wife in an honorable way. God commands men to honor their womanhood of the wife. And our sons need to learn how to treat women, to have proper decorum around women. They need to learn how to keep the marriage bed pure. They're not going to just get this all on their own. They need to be taught. And out of that, we have to teach our sons to love children, to anticipate being fathers. It's what sons are for. God intends men to take responsibility for others, to bear burdens for their families, to use their strength to build godly households. Men need to learn what their strength is for. Why did God give it to you? We need to teach our sons to love these things, pursue them. Now, what happens so much in our world with the selfishness that we have, through the desire to please oneself, young men who have not been trained in this, they have not cultivated a love for marriage and children, they have not cultivated the proper use of their strength, they have rather cultivated a love for their own pleasures. When they get married, that's why they do it, for their own pleasures, because that's all they have cultivated. It's like, here is a woman to please me and the children to please me. And it's their own selfish pleasures that rule the home, which leads to bad marriages when men never learn what their strength is for. They think only of themselves, their own pleasure, and they don't think of their responsibility. When God says, you honor that woman, you treat her with respect, knowing she is the weaker vessel, you honor that in her. And so many men push that aside because they got married for their own pleasure. They have not learned what their strength is for, not learned how to sacrifice themselves to be Christ-like in a marriage. So marriage and children for so many then becomes a matter of pleasing self and getting what we want out of the relationship, which leads to incredible divorce rates. She's no longer giving me what I want. I'm not getting what I signed up for. Those are the Puritans who said, choose the one that you love and then love the one that you chose. Right? You stick it through. Know what your strength is for. Young men need to be taught this. The world is shouting at them not to think that way. So we need to teach our sons what they are for. And even though not everyone gets married, we don't live in a fairy tale. And there are all different seasons of life and different trajectories. The truth of what God has intended for mankind remains. The exceptions do not nullify the rule. Sons are for marriage and children. I just read a story today of a pastor who had walked with a single lady who had wanted to get married, and she never found a husband. And he said it was the most heartbreaking thing. She wanted one so bad, and they prayed and they tried, and for years and years, she never had one. He goes, I got a letter from her in the mail today asking me to come to her wedding. And she was well into her 50s, and she was getting married at this stage in life. Not everyone does. Stories are very different, and yet that does not change what God revealed from the beginning. It is not good for man to be alone. I'm going to make him a helper. Sons are for marriage and children, to learn how to use their strength, to learn Christ-likeness. Third thing that sons are for. I'll leave it one word. For glory. They are bearers of the glory of God. Paul says that man, or men, meaning literal men, not mankind, right? 1 Corinthians 11. Men are the glory of God, he says. Men in a particular way are to reflect the glory of God. We are to mirror his image through our masculinity. We are to be his glory, his representatives on earth. And that means what we do with our lives matter. We are always proclaiming something about God. And our sons need to know their God and that they are the glory bearers of God and are to reflect him. They are taught to be taught how to live in light of this holiness. Our sons need to be taught to love the church, to love God's people, to love the word, to love prayer, and to love the Lord with all their heart, soul, mind, and strength. Our sons need the gospel and training in righteousness. Is there a passion among our young men for the things of the Lord? Is that being cultivated in the young men? Is there a passion for the things of the Lord? What do you want? Prayer meeting or pizza party? Who's most likely to go to the pizza party? Well, just about everybody, but I'm picking on the young men.
They have to be different.
They can overlap. Yes, thank you, Jordy. They don't have to be utterly different. Where's the passion, the driving force of the love of the Lord that overcomes all things? We are to train them in this. Do our young men fear the Lord? Or do they fear not being able to fit in with the latest cool thing? Are they taken with the glory of God? So dads, we can't be spectators. We need to be training our sons. Train them to love the glory of God, not just out there, but in here and in here. They need to be trained in those things. And of course, if you're going to train them, you got to know it yourself. It's a call to manhood all across the board. So we are called to raise up the next generation of dragon slayers, churchmen, builders, husbands, and fathers, men who know that it is their birthright to take dominion in the name of God. God has an intent for his people. He made men for a reason. He made women for a reason. He made marriage for a reason. There's purpose in his intent. He didn't just place us here on planet Earth without any purpose, without anything to do. We just kind of wander around and amuse ourselves. God didn't actually intend for us to do anything, not at all. We have reason to be here. Being passive allows the world to swoop in and win the hearts of the young men. You think of Absalom. He won the hearts of the men of Israel, and he trained an entire generation in rebellion. We become like our teachers. So who is teaching your sons? Who is teaching the sons? There was a great story coming out of the 90s sometime, maybe. It was some clothing company, and they were trying to come up with the next big thing, like what's the next fashion style? And one of the questions came up. We're doing something for teenagers, for young men in particular. What are they like? And as they discussed in the board table, they were like, well, they like to rebel. They like to annoy their parents. Like, that's a thing. If you can give something there in our society. I said, okay, let's come up with a style that really annoys parents. And so they came up with the baggy pants, the pants hanging down. So you had a room full of guys in three-piece suit and ties. And they drew out these baggy pants that are going to hang down here. And they said, parents are going to hate that. And the young men are going to buy it. Watch. That's exactly what happened. They rolled that out. And it was huge. And all the young men who thought they were being cool and rebellious were falling in line exactly with what the rich executives had said they were going to do. And they all got to buy themselves a new boat as they took all the money from the young men. I worked with a young man who loved that style back in that time. And I told him that story. I had read about that somewhere. I said, this is what, like, you've been played, man. You have been played. Right? And I explained all that. He thought about that for a bit. And this is what he said. Best fashion ever. And he kept right on going. The young men. Who is teaching your son? He is a target. He is a target. And there are many out there trying to win his heart. We need to remember what sons are for. Teach them how to succeed. We're to actively train for the future, shaping our sons into those warriors, those husbands and fathers, glory bearers. And a faithful father is going to strive for these things, to train his son. And of course, how you do this matters. If Fathers, we are told not to exasperate our sons, lest they become discouraged. If all you ever say to your son is, stop it, be careful, you messed up again, you're doing it wrong, you're going to have a very discouraged son. If they mess up, tell them. They need to know. Teach them how to fail. And say, let me show you how it's done. Let them fail without shame. Let your sons fail without shame. Let them try and then get in there. A father teaches. He doesn't just scold. A father provides room for the son to try and to fall down and to not be shamed for it. A father builds up. He doesn't tear down. Sons need room to use their strength. And a father is going to give them those opportunities. A son who never learns how to fail is never going to learn to succeed either. He's going to lack the skills and the courage, never having had the chance to practice or to develop his skill and strength. Don't always say, be careful. Say, be aware, and then get in there and train him. The father of the righteous will greatly rejoice, and he who fathers a wise son will take delight in him. When I lived in Paraguay, I would have been 15, maybe 16, we went alligator hunting, caiman hunting. And in Paraguay, you do that at night. You get the truck, you shine the lights on the pond, and you see the lights reflecting of their eyes, and you shoot them. So we went, me and my dad, my uncle, and his two sons. And so we're out in the middle of the night, we pulled up to the pond, and you could see the eyes there. And my dad lined one up and shot him. And when he shot, splash, 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 all everyone just dove underwater, except for the one that he shot. You could still see him there. It's like, I think we got him. Like everyone else is underwater. That guy is still there. I think we got him. My uncle, he says to his boys, go get him. And the boys say, no, I don't think so. Right? They backed off like, no. My dad, being my dad, he looked at me and said, Chad, go get him. And I said, yes, sir. I picked up a stick that big. It was literally that big. And I was going to poke it to see if it was actually dead. Right? It's like, Dad said to go. I'm going to go. And so into the pond I went, middle of the night, and there was, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 of those things swimming in the water. I couldn't see them. Water came up to here. I'm walking along with my stick. And I reached there on the other side of the pond to poke to see if it was dead. And so I poke. And all it was a pile of mud that had been above the water. All the live caiman in the water, my dad shot the pile of mud. So now I got my little stick, and I have all these live alligators swimming around me. And I turn around, and I very carefully work my way back. My mom just about shot my dad when she found out what he had done. I told her the story, and she's like, oh, yeah, and she thought I was talking about some kind of a duck that had swam under. And she goes, yeah, that's not a big deal. And I thought, oh, I thought I was pretty brave, right? And she goes, well, they're just ducks. Like, no, not ducks, Mom, like alligators. And she's like, where's your father? Right? Wow, was she mad. She was mad. I don't know why my dad sent me out there. Maybe he was getting back at me for wrecking his truck all those years early. I'm not sure. It didn't seem wise to me back then, and I still question the wisdom of him sending me into that pond with those alligators. But he did, and I turned out okay. The point of all of that, to be a man in this world, you have to know how to take risks. That might have been a foolish one. You have to know how to take risks. If it's always be careful, it's dangerous. Your risks are going to get smaller and smaller and smaller until you're not willing to take any risks at all. And fear is going to govern you. You're going to have to take risks, which means sometimes you're going to fail. Sometimes you're going to get bit. Sometimes it's going to go south on you. And we have to learn how to take risks with wisdom. We have to know how to get hurt and keep going. We have to learn to not be afraid of failure. Our young men need to be taught the strength that God has given them, what they are for in responsibility, and their glory as they reflect God Himself. We teach them that in wisdom. Oh, we're going to have a generation of men. They're going to shake the world. Strength, responsibility, and glory. Together with wisdom, our sons will become the men for the next generation. It is our task, dads, to teach them and to train them. Build them up. They need opportunities. They need to be able to fall and to fail without being shamed. They need to be picked back up, and they got to get back out there. Train up a son in the way that he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it.